And now let's turn to another story about an ongoing debate at the Corporation Commission. How hot is too hot when it comes to indoor heat? The numbers are in and they are up. 190 people died in Maricopa County last year from heat-related causes. It's the highest number since the county began recording such data back in 2006.
The findings were presented to the Corporation Commission last week as utility regulators decide on new rules for shutting off someone's electric power. This comes after a Sun City West woman died after APS turned off her power on a 107-degree day because she owed $50 on her bill. As a result, regulators instituted a moratorium on power shutoffs over the summer.
For more on this, I sat down with two ASU scientists who have been studying heat-related deaths. David Handula is an assistant professor in the ASU School of Geographical Sciences and Urban Planning. And Liza Kurtz is a doctoral student in global health in the School of Human Evolution and Social Change. And we began with their reaction to that newly released data on this summer's heat-related deaths.
Every time we talk out in the community with residents about this issue, they're almost always surprised that the number is so high. 190 seems to really catch them off guard. To put it into perspective, to compare against some other outcomes, in the entire state of Arizona last year, about 250 pedestrians were killed in motor vehicle accidents. And we have major initiatives happening both here in the county and statewide trying to combat that particular issue. We're dealing with a problem here that's about on the same scale.
And I think it's also important to put that number contextually over time. And so that 190 is part of a trend in increasing heat deaths we've seen over the past 10 years or so. So I believe last year the number was 180-ish. And so this is continuing that trend upward that we've been seeing in the number of heat deaths per year.
And it wasn't that long ago that the number in the whole county was below 100. And even after we account for population growth and other factors, that it's still a huge increase, as Liza says.
So it's going way up, essentially, and not necessarily because we're just seeing a lot more people living here. What are some of the causes?
Yeah, it's a terrific question, and one we're certainly thinking a lot about at ASU and with our partners at the health department. We're having a hard time reaching a strong conclusion about what is causing the increase. But what we do feel pretty confident about is that year-to-year changes in the weather are not responsible. It was hot last year compared to the long-term average. It was hot in 2012 compared to the long-term average. It was hot in 2006 compared to the long-term average. The past decade has not seen tremendous increase in temperature that would drive these types of increases that we're seeing in the heat death data, which suggests that something about our underlying social systems is falling apart. And that's where we're having a harder time coming to a conclusion, but we do have some ideas.
Yeah, as Dave mentioned, it's fairly clear from the data that it is not the raw temperature, like what you might think of as the driving factor, that it was 120 and that's 10 degrees hotter than 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. We tend to see this as an indicator that something else is going on under the surface and that heat is really becoming a diagnostic for a different social problem or social problems, perhaps. So whether it's housing or drug use or disease or something else that's
and
going
energy
on. Energy affordability, certainly. Mm-hmm. Whether it's an increase in the elderly population that are isolated and alone in their homes, something else is driving this beyond simply that it's hotter.
Okay. And we don't exactly know what that is yet. Do we know any kind of demographic trends among the people who are dying from this?
We certainly have a good sense of the heat-related deaths, which groups tend to be more represented. So, for example, men are at a much higher risk of dying from heat in Maricopa County than women over the long-term average. If you're in the oldest age group, you're much more likely to die from heat than other age groups. If you don't have regular housing, you're much, much, much more likely to die from heat than if you're in other groups. But we haven't seen, and this is part of the challenge we've had in thinking about trends over time, we haven't seen clear patterns in any of those groups becoming more or less represented in the data from one year to another. So it remains a topic of investigation.
So all of this takes place in this context of the moratorium on energy shutoffs, this woman in Sun City West who died on a 107-degree day, and the Corporation Commission trying to figure out exactly where would be a good cutoff, or if there can be one, on in terms of when utilities are allowed to turn off someone's electricity, how hot is too hot to do that. You did some surveying on this, I understand, in terms of what folks say about symptoms, whether it was too hot inside their homes. What did you find?
Sure. So we find that a little over a third of Maricopa County residents in various surveys that have been done over the years report having had some kind of adverse heat-related health effect. So that might be something all the way from very mild headache, a little bit of dehydration, all the way to very severe heat stroke that could require medical attention or hospitalization. So that's about a third of residents report that. And then we also find from various surveying that we've done that about a quarter of residents report that they are at least sometimes too hot in their own homes. And that's really indicating some interesting things about why are folks too hot if they have central air conditioning, if they're physically capable of cooling their home to a comfortable temperature. Mm-hmm. What's going on there that they're not able to?
Could cost be a factor there?
Certainly, I think so.
Yeah, we hear from folks that not only is the cost of electricity a challenge for them to stay cool, but also the cost of repairing their air conditioning. In some of the surveys that we've done, that's actually emerged as an even more important factor than the cost of electricity, which caught us by surprise a little bit.
It makes sense, though. You also looked at data on whether or not people are aware of heat warnings, like when you have those excessive heat warning days. We talk about them on the radio, but are people in general aware of what that means and if it's important to them or not?
I'd say nationally, the statistics, and here regionally as well, the statistics would say yes, a high percentage of the population is aware of the messaging. And respondents to surveys also self-report that they do change their behavior when a heat warning is enacted. But the numbers are not 100%. In the most recent survey done here, I don't even think the number was above 80% of the population was aware of a heat warning in general. And the percentage of awareness goes down in places where heat has a greater health risk or where people are dying or getting sick from heat at higher risk. So the message is not reaching the communities where it's most needed compared to other communities. So certainly more work to do there.
What about community assistance programs? Are people aware of those and how to access them?
We find in general, based on the surveying, that about less than half of folks are aware of community assistance programs. So certainly there's a big messaging gap there. But there's also, like with any messaging, you're dealing with two different problems. You're dealing with the awareness problem, and then you're also dealing with the resource problem. So many of these community programs that might be really trying to assist folks paying their energy bills or securing housing or anything else, even though not everyone is aware of them, they're still not resourced enough to be able to serve the entire population that they need to.
Are there programs that are working?
I think the programs that exist are working well. They just don't have the resources, as Liza said, to serve the size of the population. I don't remember the exact numbers we heard from some of our colleagues at the Corporation Commission workshop last week, but it might be the case that 2 or 3% of the total request for LIHEAP dollars in our state is able to be met. So yes, we do have work to do in building awareness, especially because many of these programs operate on a first-come, first-served basis. But as we increase awareness, that's also going to mean we're going to be increasing the number of folks who are turned down from services until more resources are available, which I think makes it important to pay attention to conversations happening in city council, state legislature, and even at the federal level.
So, like we say, we have not all of the data you would like here to kind of make a conclusion on this threshold question in particular. But what do you think is relevant? What do you think, if you were to be safe, you would recommend?
This is the same question that we posed to the commissioners at the workshop last week, is what is in play? What are the boundaries of this conversation? What do we need to be thinking about to make an informed decision? We know, or I think it's reasonable to assume, that they're motivated by the one heat-related death you mentioned earlier. So is this a problem just about heat deaths? And if so, we can use health data to perhaps make a recommendation. But we also heard from some of our colleagues who represent social service programs that there is more to the story here. Many customers are now way behind on their bills that they didn't have to pay last summer, and perhaps in greater debt and facing greater stress and anxiety about bills now than they would have been in the absence of the moratorium. And we even have the chance that folks will get disconnected this spring and not be without power as we head into summer 2020. So they were safe in summer 2019, not going to be safe in summer 2020. And how we deal with this accumulated debt and billings, it seemed to be a really important part of the conversation that It was almost frustrating to think about how difficult it was while we were there in the workshop.
I totally agree. I think this is a really interesting case of science being able to provide context and information, but ultimately it's a value-related decision. And so I think the Corporation Commission, we can support their work in the sense that we can provide them with information that may help contextualize the decisions that they make. But there are these many competing priorities around what is financially viable for utilities, what is safe for customers, where these things weigh on the scale of a decision making. I'm not sure that we as scientists can provide that kind of decision-making support from the value side, although certainly we can help them estimate what the effects of their decision might be.
Yeah. All right. That is Liza Kurtz, a doctoral student in global health in the School of Human Evolution and Social Change at ASU, and David Hondula, an assistant professor in the ASU School of Geographical Sciences and Urban Planning. Thank you both so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.